My name is Danny Yassin, and I'm a local anti-war and anti-empire activist. Jerry Bill is at the controls. Today is November 15th, 2017, third Wednesday of the month. Every third Wednesday, I interview authors, scholars, bloggers, columnists, and activists who help us look at our world through the prism of American imperialism. On the show, we talk about U.S. foreign and domestic policies and the actions of the military, industrial, congressional security complex. These actions have severe consequences not only for the American people, but also for the people in other countries. To create a better, humane, and a compassionate world, we must first understand what is being done in our name, and we must always be willing to stand up, speak out, and speak truth to empire. Today we have Steve Landman on telephone with us. Hello, Steve.
Dan, hello. It's good to be on with you.
It is good to have you on the show. Steve Landman is an author, blogger, and an internet radio host. After receiving a BA from Harvard University, he served 2 years in the U.S. Army and then received an MBA in 1960 from Wharton Business School at the University of Pennsylvania. After being part of family business for over 30 years, he retired in 1999, and after retirement, he decided to devote his time to progressive causes, extensive reading, and since summer of 2005, writing on vital world and national topics, including war and peace, American imperialism, corporate dominance, political persecutions, and a range of other social, economic, and political issues. Landman also hosts the Progressive Radio News Hour on the Progressive Radio Network 3 times weekly. He is a 2008 Project Censored winner and 2011 Mexican Journalist Club International Journalism Award recipient. He has authored 4 books. His website is www.stephenlandman.org. Steve, Syria has been a hot spot since Obama first covertly started interfering in 2011. In 2014, U.S. started a direct assault. Russia got involved in 2015. Compare and contrast U.S. and Russian presence in Syria.
Well, indeed, it's a night and day difference, Dan, as you know, and I imagine your listeners know as well. Obama started the war, a U.S. naked aggression, using terrorists it pretends to be combating, and the terrorists are ISIS, al-Nusra, which is an al-Qaeda offshoot, and various other ones, so many with so many different names, it's hard to keep track of them. It's like you need a scorecard at a ballpark to keep track of all the players. Some of them have come over and stopped the fighting and either join the government side of the battle or simply are talking about negotiating for conflict resolution. ISIS very much is still fighting, although it's been really, really defeated very, very harshly. At its peak, it controlled about 70% of Syrian territory, hard as that is to believe, and now it controls less than 5%. They're not defeated yet, and they can be restocked with fighters because America keeps recruiting them, so the battle isn't over, and there are thousands of them left, thousands of al-Nusra fighters, so the war has a good ways to go. The things I've heard from Russian commentators, Russian officials, is they believe that the fighting is drawing to an end and things should end soon, including comments by Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, and Vladimir Putin. Well, I think that's very lovely to hear that, and I wish it was so, but I've made this comment, and I'll stand by it. As long as America wants war and not peace, and that's the case now, as long as America maintains a military presence in Syria and won't leave, and that certainly is the case, then achieving peace is unattainable, Dan, I'm sorry to say.
We are at a critical juncture in U.S.-Russia relations. Some people believe it is at the lowest point in history. Any mistake on either side can escalate into a nuclear conflagration. How do you see Trump and Putin's actions and statements in this regard?
I really think I have much to criticize Trump about. I've written so many articles criticizing him so harshly on so many of his policies, domestic and geopolitical, just right down the line, one thing after another. At the same time, I think he really genuinely would prefer good relations with Russia, but he's been co-opted by the dark forces in America, so many. I mean the corporate interests, the CIA, the NSA, Democrats, what I call undemocratic Democrats in Congress. So I usually call them undemocratic Dems. They're certainly not democratic. There are no Democrats in Congress I know of. These people and these forces, and it's interesting, Dan, because Vladimir Putin himself explained what happens to a new president when that individual comes into office, and he said straight away, using my words, but basically this is what he said, straight away men show up in dark suits, and I remember he said, like the what I'm wearing, with briefcases, and they explain the facts of life to the new president. This is the way things are done in Washington, in the Oval Office, in Congress, and this is the way it goes. And you'll get along just splendidly as long as you follow these rules. And if you don't, well, maybe they leave a picture of Jack Kennedy on the new president's desk. It's just a friendly reminder of what can happen if he goes astray. And I think that's exactly what happened. You kind of come into the office naive, especially a businessman with no political experience. I think very quickly you get a very cold shower as to the reality of what's going on. So I don't think he has a choice. Well, he really does have a choice. He could do the right thing and have a very short tenure, or he could serve out his term. Who knows if he could be reelected. At this point, I don't think he has any chance, but that's a long ways away. That's 3 years away before another election, so anything could happen between now and then. But if he wants to serve out his term, he'll need to go along and continue dirty business as usual, and that's exactly what he's doing. And in his case, he's escalating things. He's taking them to an extreme, domestically and abroad, escalating wars, maybe planning new ones, the North Korean situation, the Iranian situation, and things are so hostile with Russia that there could be a nuclear war, Dan, with Russia, even though Trump, I don't think at all, wants any kind of a war with Russia.
Okay, what about Putin's behavior and statements and actions?
Putin, to me, is a peace champion. And I had an unusual day yesterday, Dan. Never did this before. I've been interviewed when I've been filmed face to face. It's always been done in a hotel room, and it only happened a couple of times. Yesterday, I had a photojournalist representing a documentary filmmaker making a documentary on Russia. I think they were concentrating on a number of issues, including World War II, issues related to it. But they interviewed me on U.S.-Russia relations. We spent an awful lot of time together, about 2.5 hours. A good bit of it was set-up time, and they wanted to take a lot of shots and do this. They have a lot of footage, so the filmmaker could decide exactly what they wanted to use. But we spent about an hour on Q&A, and I provided an awful lot of red meat on what's going on between Russia and America, Putin versus Trump, and so on. I genuinely believe that Putin is a consummate peacemaker. He wants peace. He deplores war. He wants mutual cooperation with all nations. He believes in multi-world polarity, not one nation like America, unipolarity dominating the world, which is exactly the U.S. policy, no matter who's president, no matter who holds the key positions in Congress. And I genuinely believe that Putin is the opposite of that. And I've said many times that he says what he means, and he means what he says, the opposite of U.S. politicians. To me, he's very, very straightforward and candid in what he says. I love hearing his remarks. I love quoting him. I think he's a very genuine guy.
You're listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF, independently owned and locally operated since 1975 in Fresno. We are speaking with Steve Landman, author, blogger, and radio talk show host. Okay, that brings us, Steve, to Trump's recent trip to Asia. Putin and Trump were at the APEC summit in Vietnam. U.S. snubbed Putin, who was seeking a joint meeting with Trump. They interacted with each other a couple of times. Give us a summary of what happened at the APEC summit.
The reason there was no formal meeting between Putin and Trump, and they met a couple of times, as you said, in Vietnam and Da Nang. Ironically, the location of America's main air base in the country during the Vietnam War, Southeast Asia wars, and all the time Trump spent in Vietnam and the region, not a word of apology to the Vietnamese for the horrors that America inflicted on the country, and indeed, I mean, millions of Vietnamese killed, Cambodians, Laotians, just a horror that went on 10 years, hot war with America's participation, but really the trouble began in the 1950s, unbelievably during the Eisenhower administration, continued until Jack Kennedy wanted to transform himself into a peacemaker, and he paid the supreme price for doing that. But Putin and Trump got together very briefly, two or three times, not too long, maybe a few minutes or a little bit longer than that. The reason there was no formal meeting between the two of them was Washington wanted an agreement from Russia that Iran and Hezbollah would not have a permanent presence in Syria. It would especially not have a presence anywhere close to Israel's border, and they wanted that in writing from Russia. Well, Russia would not give them that, and for good reason. Syria is a sovereign country. It can invite anybody into the country it wants. It can't use them to commit aggression, of course, but Syrian forces, Iranian forces, not that many of them. A lot of Hezbollah forces are there. I think many thousands of Hezbollah fighters. I think minimal Iranian forces are there, and mainly really aiding the strategy of the war with not particularly numbers of combat troops there. There may be some, but I don't think there are that many. But Syria wants them to stay. They'll certainly stay as long as fighting is going on, provided they want to stay, and I believe they certainly do. It's in both of their interests to stay, because if Syria goes down, then Iran is isolated, and the same ugly business will be repeated against Iran. And we had a 2006 war against Hezbollah. If they're weakened in any way, having less allies, they are vulnerable to another war. It could happen anyway with all the trouble going on in the region. But that was the region. There was no summit meeting between Putin and Trump because Russia would not give in to what America wanted, which was really surrendering to its will, which would have been a terrible decision to make. Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister, has pressured Putin about this. Putin has turned him down. So that's where we are now. Netanyahu, by the way, Dan, saying he reserves the right to continue bombing Syria. Well, he's done it scores of times, maybe many more times than that, and I'm certain there'll be many more. He's goading Syria to respond militarily. Syria won't take the bait, because if it does, then the war will expand. Israel will be in it full force, which means America will be in it full force, which will mean either Russia really goes the extra mile in defending Syria, and we have World War III, or Syria goes down. Either way, it's just a desperate, terrible situation.
Okay, let's move on to talk about your article that you wrote on Trump's comment, the brief interaction that they had, and Trump made the statement that he genuinely believed that Russia did not interfere in the election. And New York Times wrote an article that you talked about, and I know other people, John McCain, had a press conference criticizing Trump. Tell us about that.
Oh, indeed. I wrote one article about the New York Times, just enraged over what Trump had to say, and a second article about the overall uproar in the U.S. media about what he had to say. I mean, he made some decent comments. The unfortunate thing, Dan, is then he retracted them after he said all those things. not that much, but maybe 3, 4, 5 lines. After he said all that, he retracted it and said he goes along with what the U.S. intelligence community told him. Well, of course, that's a pack of lies. There was no Russian hacking. There was no Russian interference. The whole scheme was cooked up by John Brennan, CIA director under Obama. That's what the dirty scheme was. There was no information hacked. Hillary emails, DNC emails, information was leaked by a DNC insider. Hang on a second, Dan. Oh, I had to clear my throat. Again, no hacking, information leaked, and I think Trump absolutely believes this, and he says it and then pulls back a little bit. He'll say it again. He's called the Russiagate investigation a witch hunt, which it is, going on interminably. Accusations beginning last year. I think Congress has had investigations since January. Mueller, I think, began around May. So here we are, middle of November. So we're pushing toward the end of the year. And what have they come up with all these hours and money and time spent then? Zero. Nothing, because there's nothing to come up with. And yet all, I mean, a year after last year's presidential election, Dan, and we're still going through the postmortems.
Yeah. Well, this is what is called the big lie theory. If you tell a lie big enough and repeat it often, many people will start believing it. So this is what we are seeing in practice.
We sure are. Absolutely. The power of propaganda, and it really works, Dan. I've seen it myself firsthand with some of my family members, with some other people I know. I bring up the topic of, Russia is really the good guy in all this. There was no Russian hacking, and America is the bad guy, just proliferating big lies. And some people I talk to, their eyes roll over. They think I don't know what I'm talking about. They never heard anything like this before. So they believe the rubbish they're getting from the U.S. media, from politicians in Washington, Republicans and Democrats alike. 535 members in Congress, Dan, not a single one will tell the truth, any of the truth, about Russia and what it's doing and what it's not doing. Not one single profile in courage.
As we talked about earlier, that the U.S.-Russia relations that are at its lowest point. So I want to ask your opinion on the difference between the Cold War, the first Cold War, and this Cold War 2.0. In my observation is that there was constant communication at the highest level between the U.S. and the Soviet diplomats, but that's not the case now. How important it is there is a meeting between Putin and Trump.
Yeah, that really is so. There were a lot of summits back during the Cold War, and Russian leaders weren't after Stalin was gone. Stalin was nightmarish. He died in 1953, I believe. I have the either 53 or 54. I think it was 53. So he was long gone. You know, half a dozen years or so after eight years after World War II ended. And then we had Khrushchev and lots of others. I think Brezhnev was a bit hardline. But there was a guy named Malenkov. Mm-hmm. I think he was a bit of a lunatic, but he didn't stay around very long. But generally, the communication was open. It was strong. There was a tense relationship to a great extent. But certainly, I didn't think there was any chance that there would be a war between the two countries. There were crazies in Washington then, the way there are now, and there were people who thought that we have such a military advantage over Russia, especially in the early years after World War II, that this was the time to nuke them, put them out of business. Communism is dead. We could take over the country, loot its resources, and so on. But there were presidents around like Jack Kennedy who absolutely didn't want anything to do with anything like that. And even during the Cuban Missile Crisis or after it, he said he never, never had the slightest intention of attacking Cuba. So all the fuss and furor and whatever, and there was no possibility that there would be a war against Cuba or Russia. Today, it's so different then. We've got neocons infesting Washington, Democrats, undemocratic Democrats as bad as Republicans, and I think the risk of a war with Russia is extremely high. And if there's a war, it means a nuclear war. And if that happens then, we're all doomed. I don't know any way around it. We're all doomed.
U.S. recently forced RT America to register as a foreign agent under the U.S. Foreign Agents Registration Act, also known as FARA. Talk to about it and what are the implications?
Oh, I think it really was a hideous act. And today, the Russian lower house, the State Duma, passed legislation that will be tit for tat for what America did to RT. It'll pass in the upper house Federation Council, and Putin will sign it. There's no question about that. Could happen in days or a week, I think for certain, before the end of the month. However, the legislation moves through Russia, both the parliament and gets to Putin's desk. But really, it's not only bashing the First Amendment, a sacrilege and a huge danger to do something like this. And Russia said in advance, if this is done, it will respond tit for tat, which is what it's doing. So there'll be U.S. operations, probably the U.S. propaganda service, Radio Liberty, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Voice of America, maybe CNN International will be forced to register as foreign agents. It's really silly that this stuff has to happen, and we have this kind of a war going on, a war of words and a war of the kind of actions that need to be taken. There's no way that Russia could let this happen and not do something in return. It retaliated very modestly for seizing it's closing down its consulate in San Francisco, seizing its properties. It's suing to get them back. I don't know what help it can get from U.S. courts, even though it has a clear-cut case. But this stuff going on, we see one thing after another, Dan. I think what's scary is far more than violating the First Amendment here. I think what's really scary is we see one action after another, U.S. hostility toward Russia. It's really on a path heading for confrontation, which, again, is my greatest fear, that we could end up in a war. The chance is extremely high that that's exactly what would happen. With U.S. forces also on Russia's border in Europe, Russia, America surrounding Russia with U.S. military bases, the militarism, the spending on wars, the vicious propaganda against Russia. This is what always precedes a conflict. We've seen it in the smaller wars. I say smaller because they were against weaker countries, Iraq, Afghanistan, whatever, even though America hasn't really won. It's hanging around, and the conflicts still continue. Even Libya, just a disaster, endless violence going on. But Russia is a superpower. It can match America blow for blow. It could knock out every U.S. city. I'm in Chicago. My God, Chicago could be turned to ashes if there's a war. And there's no way of getting around a thermonuclear detonation. I've written about the horror of what it means if one goes off there. And there's nowhere to hide, nowhere to go, nowhere to escape. I mean, you would either perish very painfully, or what would be left? There'd be nothing left worth living for. It's just devastation. So it's a terrible situation, and I don't see anything getting any better.
As you're pointing out, the confrontational attitude that U.S. and Trump has, and Trump listening to the intelligence services and the neocon, the situation in Korean Peninsula is getting out of control also. And even if there is any war in against Korea, China and Russia are not going to be able to get out of it, because all the surrounding of China and Russia, as you mentioned earlier, Russia is leading towards, it will lead to the same war. So, and this trip into South Korea, Trump talked about it, threatening North Korea again. Talk to us about that.
Dan, you're exactly right. That's another huge flashpoint. There seem to be so many of them, a flashpoint there, a flashpoint in Iran, a flashpoint in Ukraine, and America certainly does not have cordial relations with China. Great trade disputes, action in the South China Sea, U.S. warships getting very close to Chinese waters, U.S. aircraft maybe penetrating Chinese airspace. China very upset about this. But if there's a war on the Korean Peninsula, it'll be a nuclear war. I don't think there's any doubt, Dan, that North Korea will use every weapon in its arsenal to defend itself. If it's going to get decimated, it's going to take an awful lot of others with it. South Korea, Seoul, could be nuked. Tokyo could be nuked. thousands of U.S. forces could be killed. And China said if America attacks North Korea preemptively, it will go to North Korea's defense, not if North Korea attacks first, which it wouldn't do, and it never has throughout its history. It would respond if attacked, so we could end a war. We could see a war with China in it, and if there's nuclear action close to Russia's border, we could see Russia in it. We're talking about a world war, Dan.
Yes, we are, and a nuclear holocaust. Trump visited, five Asian countries, Japan, South Korea, China, Vietnam, for the APEC summit, and Philippines. His visit and meeting of with Premier Xi Jinping, just give us your reaction, the statement that were made.
Well, publicly, they issued a statement, really comments made, that indicated very cordial get-together. But I think, where did Trump go after China? He went to Vietnam after China. No, he went to Vietnam. I forget the order of which he went, but the country he visited after China, he made some very hostile comments about China. Mm-hmm. You know, the trade deficit, and that we have to straighten this out and so on. So when he and Xi get together, they act like they're buddies. Their friends, and then Trump leaves and turns around and makes comments just the opposite, hostile comments about China and what it's doing. So I think the relationship is a very tense one. Certainly it is with Russia, even though we saw when Putin was together with Trump. I mean the brief snapshots we got of them together.
Thank you,
very
Steve.
Cordial and friendly.
Thank you for being my guest on the show. Speaking truth to empire. Until next time.